It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, Internet! That is Brian B. Rob Rob from MassLive.com. That is Jay King El Nino from The Athletic. I am Sam Jam Packard, and together we are Stalpotable! Coming to you live on the CLNS YouTube channel. If you want to watch this show, please subscribe to CLNS. We are brought to you by our good friends at FanDuel, America's number one daily fantasy or sports gambling. I think it is a gambling website. And so please check them out if you're interested. If you like what we are doing here, this is the Monday, or I guess now Sunday, free show of Still Potable. But we are also here for you every single day of the week on our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable and you can get analysis from us Monday through Friday. And so we are very thankful and grateful that you've joined us here on this free episode, where you can find it on the CLNS YouTube. But if you want that more content, subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/stillpotable. We are coming to you today to deliver what we call the Potable Six Pack. That's where B, Rob, Jay, and I pick the six most intriguing, most interesting topics revolving around this Boston Celtics team. That's occurred. Generally, we do it in the past week, but I don't remember the last time we did a Potable Six Pack. So I'm saying there's no rules. It can be for the entire 21 games of the season. But we're going to pick the six things that interest us the most.
Oh, we're opening it up to the full season so far.
Oof. We've already done on Still Potable, I think.
You're getting a little creative here.
I'm trying to get creative. You know, we've done four or five 20-game check-ins of where this team is, and so I figured we haven't done it in six-pack form.
Kind of a BS move to change that right now after we had time to prepare.
After our pre-show meeting.
And now, yeah.
Yeah, our pre-show meeting of 9 minutes ago.
I don't know what to do.
9 minutes ago where we said, are we doing a six-pack?
You're far more prepared for this draft than I am.
That's funny because you think that this was some sort of a calculated move rather than me just not knowing what to say and then talking and introducing that. So I think we're all equal levels of prepared. I obviously won last week, as I do every week on the Potable Six Pack, so I will determine the order. I'm going to go first, then I will kick it to B-Rob, and then it will be Jay, and then we'll snake back around the other way for round two. I think for first pick, this may be some recency bias, but Kristaps Porzingis is very good, and the Celtics look a lot better when he's on the floor. He came back after missing four games to play against the Knicks. I think hit his first seven shots, maybe eight shots, and just the Celtics just look so much more dynamic on offense. Their rotation looks so much more dangerous. Everything is better with Kristaps on the court. And really, like, it feels like a major question is just like, what can the Celtics do to keep this guy healthy? Because when those five starters are on the court, I don't really think there's a team that can beat them. Jay, I guess, what are your reactions to me making the best first pick of all time?
Kristaps came back and instantly the Celtics offense just looked much better. And it wasn't just that he hit shots, which he did early. He hit his first seven shots. Two of them at least were threes. But it's just he makes things so much – it's so much easier to find a solution when Kristaps Porzingis is on the court. The Knicks had Mitchell Robinson. They had Isaiah Hartenstein. And it's like all you have to do is just run a pick and pop. And the defense is going to be in a compromised position. And that was it. And then when the Knicks switched – it was like, oh, cool. Let's post up Kristaps Porzingis against RJ Barrett or whoever else was. And he just shot over the top. And there was one play in particular that I thought stood out. And it's happened a few times this season. but every time it's kind of jarring to see. But Tatum got Mitchell Robinson switched onto him and knew, like, even though he's a big man, even though I can go at him, that's not the matchup here. And that's just part of the progress. That's part of the growth. That's part of incorporating Porzingis. And when Tatum against a center is not your best matchup, you know you have another great offensive player. And he just took a dribble, calmly found Porzingis. Porzingis shot over the top of whichever Nick it was. I think it was RJ Barrett. And it was just an easy bucket. Small guys used to buy Porzingis, but now he just like takes his time and just shoots over the top of their head and seems to make it like 75% of the time.
Yeah, the amount of times he did that on Friday night seems like effortlessly stood out. And to Packard's point, it's all about, in my mind, like how what he talked about after the game. He was like, yep, felt great. And he talked to us earlier in the week, Jay, about saying, I'm not a big minutes limit guy. I don't want to come back and not be full go. And the training staff figured that out. Obviously, he 29 minutes in that game out of the gate. I think he just watching him from an eye test clearly was moving around great on both ends of the floor there. So there's certainly the Knicks are not equipped to guard this starting five with Porzingis in the mix. It's hard to find many teams, period, around the league who have like a decent chance against that starting five when they're all together and healthy and clicking. So it is essentially like if he's not going to play the final 60 plus games or whatever, but if they can just keep any kind of ailment he has to the minor variety, then this has the makings for, you know, a true offensive juggernaut for that five-man unit.
That was a great Tatum and Brown game too. Great. Nobody has really talked about it much. They didn't have crazy stat lines. Jalen got ejected. We'll talk more about that soon, I'm sure. But they were just making the right play and the right read. And they were the reason why Derek White got open so many times. They were the reason Kristaps Porzingis had open threes. Like, they just kept making the right play and realized it wasn't about them. It was about the team. I thought that was just an awesome, awesome Tatum and Brown performance in ways that you don't always see from those guys.
Joe shouted him out for it after the game, to your point, like, because it was a game where they both, I feel like, weren't forcing it off anything. They were sacrificing themselves for those guys. And like I said, when you have that many weapons around them, it gives White, Holiday, et cetera, the confidence too, and then hopefully take some burden off of those guys as well while maintaining the high level of efficiency that this team can perform. So that is, again, I think another great sign in terms of where this team could be at for the big picture here.
And this is just like a level one, just like is a not very deep level of analysis. Some might even call it stupid. But something I noticed on Friday night is that when Kristaps is in the game, it's just their depth is that much more impressive when the rotation is just then Al Horford.
Basically, you're saying that it's better when Delano Banton's not in the rotation.
Yes. Every moment that Kristaps is in the game is like we don't have a Delano Banton moment. And it's just like, wow, when you can bring those three guys off the bench and like that is your entire rotation, basically it's just there's no real weak point for the Celtics rotation. And so having more good players, good for the Celtics is what I'm trying to say.
That seems like a valid theory, honestly.
Thank you. I go to many schools. I've got many degrees to come up with that. Before we move on to B-Rob with the second pick, we're going to hear from our friends at FanDuel.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. So if you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options. You can do spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Massachusetts 21 and present. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 1-800-327-5050
for 24/7 support. Played smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. And now back to the show.
And we're back with Still Potable. Reminder, go to patreon.com/stillpotable. Subscribe today to get the best Celtics content Monday through Friday from B-Rob, Jay, and I. B-Rob, you have the second pick in the Potable six-pack.
I'm going to go with Derek White's efficiency. And in my mind, the guy heard MVP chants on Friday night. We can debate whether those are not valid. I think, you know, we...
Nemias Kedda heard MVP chants.
Yeah, I mean, listen, yeah. Well, the history of Garden MVP chants, we don't need to get into that. But with that said, Derek White...
This is Jaylen Brown.
Not once.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, yeah, we should do maybe a history on MVP chants at the Garden and do the tally on that. Will be a that'd be a fun podcast.
For I think it's like too good to get mock MVP chants, but not quite good enough to get real MVP chants.
Right. That's a fine. So, exactly. Like there's a fine window there, and I think Jaylen at this point fits right into it. But yeah, Derek White up to 47%. From the field, and perhaps most importantly, up to 41% from three-point range through his first 18 games of the year. And in my mind, that is a huge number because not only is that number high, he's also shooting close to a career high 5.8 attempts from three-point range. And so if you look at just his progression of this Celtics team, you know, the year they acquired him 2 years ago at the trade deadline, he shot 31% from three that year, and then going to 38% last season, now 41%. Well, adding an attempt per game for each season, like the magnitude of how huge that is for this team, I don't think can't be understated. Because when you look at how much confidence that is giving him right now in a game like Friday night against the Knicks, or honestly, many times this year, where when he first got here, it'd be surprising for him to be a third option on any given night. And now I feel like that's almost the norm where if Porzingis is out of the question, he's, you know, ahead of Jrue Holiday in the offensive totem pole. So the fact that he is embracing shooting more, doing it with confidence, and delivering it at career high numbers through 20 games is creating a, you know, an even scarier Celtics offense right now that is going to be giving defenses playing nightmares when the starting five is on and even when it's off the floor.
Yeah, he's only taken more threes per game once in his career. And that was on a pretty bad Spurs team. And he shot 34% from three when he did it. Man. Now he's super efficient with those extra opportunities. And it's just, to me, it's more about the shots that he's hunting now compared to the percentages. It's like when guys go under, he just stops and pops. When there was one play against the Knicks where they guarded him, he crossed over right to left, went back behind the screen, pulled up, schwap. And those are the shots that he would not take when he first got to the Celtics. Those are the shots he's knocking down with full consistency now. And that changes things because, like Jrue Holiday said it the other day, he's like, sometimes they put their worst defender on Derek White. And that's kind of disrespectful. And it is. But also, there's against that starting lineup, there's nowhere to hide a bad defender. So if Derek White is playing with confidence, if Derek White is scoring, if Derek White is being a threat, then you're just in a lot of trouble. And the Celtics backcourt against New York, one thing that I don't talk about enough, at least, is the size and physicality of the Celtics backcourt. Both Jrue Holiday and Derek White had several strong drives to the basket where they just bullied Jalen Brunson. They bullied even some of New York's other guards, Quentin Grimes once, I think, Jrue Holiday got. It's like, they're big, they're physical, and if you have a weak link, if you have a smaller guy, they can just take advantage of you. And so Derek White, he's been so good this season, but his scoring is something that just puts teams in a bind, because if he's scoring, then you're in trouble, and there's really, like, nowhere for a bad defender to hide.
His, like, willingness to take shots is just so much changed from when he first got here. Like, he was turning down open threes in his first kind of like season with the Celtics, and it was a problem. Yeah. And now you mentioned, like, he's taking those kind of looking for his three. He's just taking, I think he took like in the right corner against the Knicks, just like three that I was like, that's wildly contested. Like, that is not an open three. And he made it. And it just creates like such a different level of aggression and the need for the defenses to account for him. But I also think, like, I don't know if it's underrated. It just comes back. And I think, Jay, we've talked about this. I don't understand how Derek White gets so many opportunities in the paint. Like, he seems like he's smaller, but he's just a very good driver in terms of
he's a big guard, though. He's a big guard.
But his, just like, the way he approaches the basket, he has this, like, kind of slow, herky-jerky style where he can, like, change speeds, and he just creates opportunities in, like, while on drives that I just, when the drive starts, I go, I don't understand how this is going to go in. But it goes in a lot of, like, a lot of the time. And so I think his ability to like, be aggressive from three, but then can also take you off the dribble and drive. And the fact that, he's the fourth option on this team right now. And, like, you mentioned, like, how good a game Jalen and Jason have, but, like, they're passing to Kristaps, obviously makes it that much easier. Well, they're just passing to Derek White, and he's knocking down six threes. It makes the game so much easier for them because they're going to get a lot of attention, but they just have to make the right pass. And so I think just his kind of dynamic scoring, where you press up on him, he's going to drive past you, he's going to find a way to score, or you go under the screen, he's going to knock down threes. It's just huge for this team. And I think his response to, like, owning up to having a pretty bad second half against the Pacers and then coming out and having his best scoring game of the season, I think, like, one, it's just kind of cool to see a player own up to that and then go out there and be able to respond. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, I had a shitty game. It's another thing to go out and then just have a very good game. And so I think he deserves a lot of credit just for his consistency this year. I think he's had some maybe down games here or there, but he always seems to respond pretty well.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And, I mean, even going back to, like, last postseason, like, Game 7, when Tatum went down in that game, like, White was the only guy who was, I feel like, able to, you know, create stuff himself and do anything offensively to give the team a chance in that game when things went haywire. And I think that's kind of foreshadowing that next leap he's taken this year with, you know, the aggressiveness and the confidence that you guys just talked about. And so, I don't know, it's funny, like, he's never going to make an all-star team, like, with this team. There's just, I feel like, just, he's not going to have enough of the numbers, and there's too much talent around it here for him to kind of break through. But through 20 games, when you factor in the defense, I feel this is like certainly an all-star caliber type year that he's putting together. If he was able to sustain this, he'd have to put up like 20 points per game and have this kind of efficiency, I think, to actually get votes and against the competition there. But I mean, he might be the second or third, most consistent Celtic easily this year.
And it's crazy because from where he was 2 years ago to where he is now shooting wise, like, beyond Sam Hauser, is there anyone other than Derek White you'd rather have shooting an open shot for the Celtics?
Probably I don't not.
Know. I'd probably know. Go with Jason Tatum, but
I mean, that's, you could certainly choose Jason Tatum, but White is White is up there though, and to be a knock, not just like a pretty good shooter, he's become a knockdown shooter, which is, the improvement is just startling.
What percentage do you become a knockdown shooter?
Is like anything over 40%? To me, knockdown is like a feel. Like, if
well, describe
you're open,
that feeling.
If you're open, do I expect you to make it with great consistency? That's the feel.
So the contention 41%
will give him knockdown.
Only how many knockdown shooters do the Celtics have right now? Two?
Hauser and White? Yeah, probably.
Pritchard has been that guy, is not that guy this year yet, but I guess has the history of being, like, I'd put him on that list if it was like last year.
Horford has been that guy in stretches sometimes.
Horford in the corner. Horford in the corner is a knockdown shooter. Horford anywhere else is not.
Yeah. All right, my pick. I'm going with the Celtics blossoming feud against referees.
Like it.
It's been just good content. Kristaps Porzingis gets a technical like every 5 minutes. Jason Tatum got ejected and was furious. Although he said he wasn't mad. He was clearly mad. Jaylen Brown, I thought Jalen was trying to fight the ref. He did the like this, like come on ref, like come and get some. And
he stormed back out onto the court, got pushed back, and then just kept coming like three or four more times. He needed to be pushed back multiple times to leave that court on Friday night.
And Jalen, I don't think he did enough probably to get the first one that was borderline. The second one was just a wild call from all the way across the court. It was based off a hand wave. Why are you even looking at Jaylen Brown in the corner of the bench? What are you focusing on that you're not looking at the game? You're looking at a guy who's not even on the court and you see him waving at you. Just do your job, man. but the feud. And then also when both those guys got ejected, they just said some hurtful things about the referees in the press conferences. Tatum came out, but Jalen was – it was masterful. What did he say? He's like, I always thought my first ejection would be for something exciting, not some overly emotional ref having a bad day. Like, that's just a killer line. Ooh. Like, that's just destroying the referee. And so it's probably not for the best for the Celtics as a team that they have this feud going on with the refs. But as far as content-wise for spicing up games that aren't always close, I'm into it.
Friday night ejections. It might just be, you know, a thing at TD Garden this year.
What I like is that both Tatum and Jalen were like, yeah, we didn't get our money's worth. Like, they have a company line. Like, clearly, like, if you're going to get ejected, you should go balls to the wall. Like, you should throw a chair out on the court or something. Like, both of them were like, yeah, that wasn't worth it. Jalen might have gotten his, like, more money worth than Tatum did. Tatum just kind of took his ejection. But very, very soft refereeing. Also, all the hanging on the rim texts they've got this year. It's just... at what point is the ref just embarrassed for what he's done at that point? I know in the handbook it says, like, a gesture like that is unsportsmanlike and deserving, but, like, you just got to have some pride in your work. Like, what happened to the refs that would clap back?
My thing is really, why are you even looking at Jalen Brown? And then also, Jalen had never been ejected from a game before. Jalen hardly ever gets texts. Jalen says nothing to the ref. A guy like that should get a little leeway. And it was great too. How many times do we find out exactly what a player said to get a technical? And Joe was like, yeah, Jalen told him it was some weak ass shit. It's like, great, thank you. That is awesome. We should always know what these guys say.
And but my understanding of an NBA game is if that is a technical worthy saying, like that, I assume players were saying a lot worse than that constantly. I think Joe Mazzulla said, like, he's heard a lot worse on the basketball court. But if just saying one swear word gets a technical, that's wild. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
It was great because I watched Joe at the timeout after the ejection, and he talked to the referee, and the ref must have told him that Jalen said that was weak-ass shit. And when I tell you, the smirk on Mazzulla's face was like – the greatest smirk of all time. It was like this classic smirk, and you know inside he's like, are you fucking kidding me? He said that was weak ass shit and he got a tech for that. So just, it was good theater. It was good theater. And then the Celtics, it was like a 4-point possession, was it, when they had all the techs and nonsense happened, and then they kind of closed the door on the Knicks after that, which was another good sign. They didn't let it spiral any further than it did already.
Do you guys feel like this is kind of a, even beyond the subject, like kind of a league-wide issues?
Yeah.
With officials this year, like, you look at the Jokic tossing in Detroit a couple weeks back, there's like a game like that where even like the Pistons announcers are like ripping the ejection as he was going off the floor in the second quarter. I'm like, when does that ever happen? Be like, that tells you like how egregious it is. And this, it feels like there's just no discretion by these officials anymore, to your point of playing like, okay, you just gave Jalen a tech. And now you're walking in the ways across the court. Like, you should not be looking to give him a second tech right now unless he does absolutely something outrageous. And waving at an official from while he's subbing out of the game is exactly not that. So that's like, I feel like the NBA has to look hard at this shit.
Yeah, it's just unnecessary. I feel like they've gone so far toward trying to get rid of the disrespect that they just create hostility. Like, there's no need for the hanging on the rim text. It doesn't impact the play. Guys aren't hanging on the rim for that long. Who cares? Just let it go. All you do by calling those is create hostility between the refs and the players, because the refs have to call it. They're being told they have to call this stuff. And then the players are like, what the fuck? Like, we shouldn't have these punishments for doing basically nothing. So I think it needs to come from the top down of the league. Like, just be a little more lenient. And I think normally every year stuff like this happens, and then by the end of the season is just kind of back to normal. So maybe that'll happen again. But it's just like, when you call things so tight, it's just going to infuriate everyone involved, and just makes no sense to me.
It's also like, you have words too. Like, you can just talk back to Jalen and just be like, no, it wasn't. Like, it was a foul. And like, there's no need to bring whistles into this situation. Like, where's Joey Crawford just like screaming at Tim Duncan? Like, where the refs? Well,
Joe Crawford once teed up Tim Duncan for laughing on the bench. So let's not bring him up as
maybe he's not the best example, but there is
that was Joey Crawford, right? I think it was.
Yeah,
well, yeah, that's it.
But there's a way in which the refs, like, you have a voice in this too. You are able to use it. Like, do not just rely on your whistle. Yes, if something says like so, like wildly disrespectful about you, or just like crosses a line after some warnings or something like that. But a simple like just use of profanity should not be a tech. And then just to be looking for an excuse to kind of pile on after that, after he's upset about the first tech, it just seems like they've lost all control. I have a question for you two, you know, esteemed journalists. Gary Washburn was not at the game, so he was not the pool reporter for this game to ask the refs about the tech. Himmelsbach was. What would have taken for me to be the pool reporter? Do I have to be a union member or an actual writer to be the pool reporter in that situation?
It probably would have taken 10 to 12 illnesses, injuries. Yeah,
everyone must have had to pull out that. I
couldn't just ask? Like, there's no few, how does that happen? How do you guys decide who the pool reporter is?
I think, I mean, generally Himmelsbach takes charge of that, of like, or Gary usually, but it is, I think maybe we'll put your name in. We'll start voting on it. Like, all right, who's going to be pool reporter tonight? All right, I'm nominating Jam Packard. And you can maybe, you know, campaign a little bit to the
group. Then I got to be rooting for ejections, you know, and maybe with this Celtics team, we're going to get one every Friday night. It's just something I thought of on Friday. It's like, how does that decision get made? Adam Himmelsbach.
What happens on a Zoom too? It's not even an in-person interview. It's a Zoom interview with the
officials. Oh, you don't even get to go to the officials' locker room and ask them. It's over Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom. Yes.
Oh, that's stupid. I don't want to even do it anymore. All right. Before we get to the second round of the Potable Six Pack, we're going to hear from our friends at Factor. This holiday season, you might be looking for healthy, convenient meals to keep you energized on your jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Listen, the holidays are a busy season. I know I have exams coming up. It just takes all the thinking out of going to the grocery stores. There's no stress over meal prepping. With Factor, you can just choose from 35-plus weekly flavor-packed meals, fresh, never-frozen meals that support your healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, and they're delivered right to your door and ready to eat within 2 minutes. If you are too busy running around to plan lunch, to do all those things, you have meals ready for you in 2 minutes, and they have a wide menu, a number of different options. And so they also have a lunch to go option, which is perfect if you just don't want to do that much thinking during the day. So if you want meals, healthy meals that are will save you time and keep you stress-free, go to factormeals.com/winning50 and use code winning50 to get 50% off. That's winning50 at factormeals.com/winning50 to get 50% off your order today. And we're back. Remember, go to patreon.com/stillpotable if you want to subscribe for daily content Monday through Friday from B-Rob, Jay, and I. That's patreon.com/stillpotable. Jay, lead us off with the first pick of the second round.
I just want to say first that you used poor grammar there. For someone who just touted all the schools he's gone to, all the degrees, that was not an "and I" situation. It should have been me, B-Rob, and Jay.
I accept your feedback, and I'll use it to next time I come back from a break.
I don't think I would correct anyone else in the world, but I just like to get at you for some reason.
Yeah, ever since you called me Cheddar Bob, I've like had a real downturn in self-esteem, so thank you for that.
My pleasure. Anyway, I'm going with Celtics home dominance. They are 10-0 at TD Garden. They have a net rating of 17.2 points per 100 possessions that they're beating teams by so far this season. And I just feel like that needed to happen. Like, Joe Mazzulla was asked about it, kind of said, "I don't know what's going on. Like, who knows?" But they got their asses kicked at TD Garden plenty of times throughout the playoffs last year. They gave up so many games. They had longer series because Trae Young, you know, gave them 13 points or whatever it was in the fourth quarter on their home floor. They had longer series against Philadelphia because they let James Harden get 40-something on the parquet floor when Joel Embiid wasn't even playing. They had Miami, they lose the first two at home and put themselves in an impossible situation. So taking care of business at home, it may not seem like the most important thing, but after what happened in the playoffs, setting a tone of this is our court, nobody's going to come in here and beat us, we're actually going to kick the crap out of everybody who walks into Boston, that's just a good sign to me. It shows the business-like approach they've taken into the season. And I just think, you know, that needs to continue into the playoffs because they love playing seven-game series. They love playing long series, and they should probably not do that. Like, every once in a while, it's okay to sweep somebody. Every once in a while, it's okay to just play your best at all times. But the home record, 10 straight wins at home, is really good start there.
Yeah, the splits are phenomenal for them at home right now. I think their net rating at home is like plus 20 something, easily tops in the league. They have easily the best offense in the league at home. And yeah, this is the one seed for them is clearly right there this year. Like, and they're going to have competition for it, but they've played one of the toughest schedules in the league to this point, and they're still a game and a half up on the one seed in the East. So like, home court's going to matter a lot this postseason, and it's there for them. And if they can sustain this early and carry it through the postseason, where I feel like last year, Jam, like they had all sorts of just like random home losses. You're like, what the hell? Whether it was the Pacers or the Magic is no longer a random home loss, but it's there are still plenty of those types last year where you wondered like, why can't they just figure it out in the friendly confines of the Garden?
Do you guys have any explanation for this? Like, I was just looking back at the schedule. They haven't played that many like difficult games at home. They played the Bucks, I think, is the kind of closest, most difficult game. But then Heat early in the season, they weren't really playing that well. They play the Sixers without Embiid and Maxey. But other than that, they haven't played that many, like, you know, juggernauts. So, but still 10-0 is kind of wild. The splits are kind of wild. The Peyton Pritchard shooting splits are, like, the most dynamic, like, drastic thing there is. Like, I don't understand. But I just don't have a great explanation for why this is, other than just like people cheering me on makes me play better. But we've seen, as Jay talked about, that has not been the case in like the past 3 years of the Celtics. Like, I obviously think the Celtics and like the Celtics fans, like TD Garden is one of the best environments to play in. But I don't have an explanation for this year versus like why they're that much better. And I'm wondering if you two have one other than like, if you
play I think it's what Joe Mazzulla said. Shoulder shrug.
And I'm not at all.
It's a huge focus on under, was it Ime who came in and was like, we need to be better on the road. We need to be road warriors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he like really focused on how they had to learn how to win on the road. And they've been fantastic on the road. They've won so many big games, elimination games over the last couple of years. Like that's part of their DNA, or at least it was in their former iteration. Now, I guess we'll see. It's a very new team, a lot of new faces. But like you also have to take care of business at home. And it's been part of their DNA to lose games in like just stunning fashion at home. The Milwaukee game 5 in 2022,
yep,
when they were up like 12 or 13 points with 5 minutes left and then didn't rebound a free throw and allowed, was it Bobby Portis to put back a game-winning bucket? And it was just, that should have ended their season. Basically, they then played two fantastic games the rest of the way in that series. But like, you've got to be able to take care of business when you should take care of business. And the way that they've done it, not just beating teams, but just absolutely pummeling teams at TD Garden is a great, great sign.
Yep. All that's like, those games add up over the course of the playoffs, to your point, Jay, and also blowing teams out at home, like keeping like the minutes level for a lot of these guys are in a terrific spot a quarter way through the year. And that's part of it. Like you beat up on teams at home, guys get the fourth quarter off, and that helps a team out over what they want to be, a 100 game grind here. So that stuff like that, it's a really big deal.
If they don't lose a game at home for the rest of the year, they'll win the NBA championship. That's just science. That's science. Just how things work out.
It's good math right there,
Patrick. I would say that's not necessarily science. What if they get the 2 seed?
If they somehow go 41-0 at home but are so bad on the road that they fall to the 2 seed, then yes, science would say they don't necessarily,
just like the Warriors last year,
championship. Yeah. All right. I offered a scientific hypothesis and was refuted. Thank you, Jay. You've been very academic on this podcast, Jay, and I appreciate that.
I'm a scholar.
We all say that often. B-Rob, you're right.
I am up here. I'm going to go with Drew Holiday's usage rate. It is still the lowest of his career through 21 games here. At about 17%. He is coming off of a higher usage game against the Knicks, scored 16 points on 7-11 shooting, scored over 15 points in the game. That was the first time he did that since November 15th. And why I think that's kind of curious here is like, Porzingis was out for a few games here, but that didn't necessarily change Holiday's usage a lot. And I think the team, if anyone offensively, for as good as they are offensively, they're still trying to figure out what the best spots for him are. I think we thought from that in the Knicks game, like they got the ball on him in the post a couple times with, he tried to bully DiVincenzo, bully other Knicks smaller guards down there. But then outside of that, he's really been, mostly just a catch and shoot three guy or a pull up three guy, which with, variable shot selection on those fronts. But it'll be interesting to me with where his efficiency is, just where that trends. He hasn't been finishing well at the rim this year. He's 47% from 2-point range, which is a pretty big drop from where he was last year in Milwaukee at 54%, despite a sharp decrease in shots. And you would think a generally easier shots here than he had as, the second option there. So to me, it's going to be fascinating to watch, see where his offense goes from here. And clearly he can hit the three, he can do more if they need him to, but are they just better off going with their other options anyway, with White playing so well? And obviously Porzingis putting up queer numbers from a inside the arc.
It's been interesting because he sometimes seems to operate totally independently from the rest of the team. Like everyone else is running actions, playing together. And then Drew's shot attempts come from like random moments where he just gets the ball, like takes three dribbles and shoots a step back. It's like they haven't quite found out how to use him. And I thought that one of the themes from the last game's press conferences after the game was the empowerment of Jrue Holiday. And Joe Mazzulla said, you know, it was great to see him be aggressive out there. Jaylen Brown said, I want to empower guys, and he included Jrue Holiday in that. And he said, that's one of the focuses of mine, is like empower my teammates, included Jrue in that. And then Derek White also used the word, like, we need to empower Jrue. So I feel like it's starting to become a focus of their team from Joe Mazzulla down to really kind of figure out how to get Jrue Holiday going a little bit, figure out how to get him to become a bigger part of the offense, because he's not like a flawless offensive player at all. And I do think that they're better off running offense through other guys at times, but he's also like, he's a very big physical driver. He can take advantage of some of the guys defending him, and they haven't found out how to get to that in the right situations. And they probably need to do more of that. They're going to try to do more of that from the sound of it. And maybe it's just like Jaylen and Jason has to be really good at recognizing when to kick out and when to find guys. And that will allow Jrue Holiday on the second side to get downhill and get open shots and stuff like that. But it has definitely been a work in progress with Jrue. He's not just down usage wise, but also not as efficient as he was in Milwaukee, which is a pretty weird double. Like, normally when guys have a smaller role, they get better in that role, but it hasn't been the case for him, probably because they've taken away some of the things that he's more comfortable doing and are giving him things, tasks that he's not as comfortable with.
Do you guys notice on Friday that he like attempted normal layups, I think, with his right hand instead of just bizarre lefty floaters? I do think that was an important part of adding to his efficiency. I do think, you know, from CLNS, Bobby Manning may have bullied Jrue Holiday into being better on offense by asking him why he was so bad at offense at the shoot around before the Knicks game. I don't think he used those words exactly, but it was the subtext. I saw the other day on my Twitter timeline, someone retweeted a highlights from a 50-point performance Jrue had while playing for the Bucks, and I couldn't even fathom the idea of Jrue Holiday, or this version of Jrue Holiday, scoring 50 points in a game for the Celtics. Like, it just doesn't really make – I can't compute with what I've seen from Jrue Holiday. I think he has, like, his most dynamic or most dangerous part of what he can do now is, like, when he has a smaller guard on him, I think he does some very good things with the post up and just being able to be that physical. And whether or not he goes up with it or dishes out, I think he gets, like, very good positioning there. I think, like – do you really expect his usage rate to change, especially when he's out there with the starters? I think he's automatically the fifth option on offense. And so basic math usage rate, like, is it going to get much more than 20% if they have those five guys out there? Are they going to look to him to be kind of like the point guard when Tatum's not on the court? Because it feels like they very much have gone to when Tatum's on the bench, this is Jaylen Brown or Derek White's team. So I'm just like, don't know where kind of an increased offensive role from Jrue is going to come from. And I kind of think that's like a kind of a blessing of how good this team is and how many options they have on offense, that they can, Jrue can just really focus on being a defensive anchor, someone who's trying to force turnovers. They forced a lot more turnovers against the Knicks than they had really in any game, or less, at least it felt like that. But I don't know if his usage rate is necessarily going to change. And I don't know if that's a bad thing, just considering they have four better options than him just in terms of offense right now.
To me, it's not so much about the usage as like just getting him in spots where he's comfortable. Like, I don't think he's been in too many places where like he's got a good rhythm. He's feeling himself a little bit. Like, there's none of that. And so
how important is it to like work to find Jrue Holiday spots where you also have to get Jason Tatum good looks? You have to get Jaylen Brown good looks. You have to get
Kristaps. To me, it's got to come in the offense. Like, you're not going to run a lot of stuff for Jrue, but if guys are cognizant of the fact that they're drawing a crowd and that Jrue can operate on the second side and they kick it and get it going to the other side, like, that's where the extra opportunities need to come to me. And that's where the Celtics did a great job against the Knicks, was like recognizing that they were helping a lot. They had a ton of people in the paint, and it was just like, got the ball swinging, and that's where Jrue was able to drive guys. That's when when you alleviate some of that pressure on him, there's not any help for him. He's able to just go at DiVincenzo, stuff like that. So that's to me like the next step for him. But it's not the biggest priority. But I do think like he shot, I think it was 54% on twos last year in Milwaukee. He's down to 47% right now, which is just too low. And like that should be way higher. So they need to figure out ways to just get him comfortable, get him in rhythm. And it's not going to be like running the offense through him all the time. I don't mean that.
Yeah, and I think part of that too, acquiring him, you know, whatever, a couple of days before training camp started, like they had a plan for everyone else in this offense before he got here. And then they obviously, you loved having Jrue Holiday here, but figuring out how to best incorporate him, to Jay's point, like that takes time. And when you factor that in with the percentages going down, then you don't necessarily want him taking more shots if that 47% from 2-point range sustains. So like he is getting older, like guards in their 30s. We've seen declines there, obviously plenty here over the years in Boston. Offensively,
Physically, it doesn't seem like he's declined.
No, I mean, just great defensively, he looks great. I agree. Like that's why it's more of like, is this real or not? Like, I don't know, like 20 games, it's a sample size, but it's not a huge one. So they certainly could work at getting him like better opportunities and him finding those as part of it too, with better just shot selection and, you know, not taking shots when you're could clinch a game with like 8 seconds left. Instead let yourself get fouled instead, probably.
For the final pick in the Potable six pack, I'm not going to look in the past nor in the present. I'm looking to the future. And the Celtics have one of the weirdest schedules in the upcoming week.
Oh, hold on. You set the rules that we were choosing from the first 21 games of the season, but now you are going to choose from beyond the first 21 games of the season.
Jay, since we started this segment, this is
counterintuitive right here. I believe this is an illegal pick.
There have never been rules to the Potable six-pack.
You created the rules. You created them.
I said some things. I could have picked a FIBO Eurobasket thing. I could pick anything I want in this. There's no rules for the Potable six-pack. I believe
the rules were first 21 games of the season.
I could have picked the fact that no one on the Celtics knows who Taylor Swift is. Like, it doesn't have to be basketball related. There are no rules in the Potable six packs. It's just six things that we want to talk about.
I'm proposing a new rule to the Potable six pack right now as a new.
No more Jay talking.
I think every week, I know Packard, you have quite the winning streak going in the Potable six pack. I think we need to post a poll to see who's actually winning these Potable six packs.
Oh, you want some sort of
Packers running
democracy running. Yeah.
We need to see, I know you've been counting the votes on your own Packard for this, but I want to open up the polls a little bit more and hear from the people on this.
I'm open to some sort of democracy or voting. I just think Jay needs to, you know, shut up a little bit about the rules, because this is a free flowing form of ideas. And I think we all work better with less structure.
You took it upon yourself to remake the rules.
I make the rules.
In that process, you created rules and now you're breaking them.
Oh, so when I said the first 21 saying. Games, you really like, adjusted. You went to your notes in this and you adjusted your pick because of it.
Yeah, 10-0 at home. I didn't speak to what happened in the last week at home. I went to the full 21 games. I actually adjusted.
What were you going to pick if it was just limited to the Knicks game?
10-0 at home.
Case in point. My pick. The Celtics have the weirdest schedule I've seen in a while coming up in the next week, with two what have been described as baseball series, where they play the Cavs, and then the Magic. For some reason, they haven't played. They've only played one game in the past week, and then we get a back-to-back next week, which doesn't really make any sense. For some
reason, is the in-season tournament.
The Cavs and the Magic weren't in the in-season tournament.
But they wanted the games to be on their own on those nights. So Thursday night, they only had two games. Saturday night, they only had one game.
Well, it's poppycock, Jay. I'll tell you what it is. It's poppycock. But I think the Celtics undefeated at home is doomed right here in this week, because one, the Cavs and the Magic, I think, are pretty solid teams with a lot of, like, obviously the Magic have Mo Wagner, so it's going to be difficult to win two games against them, but they have a lot of size. I feel like the Celtics have struggled with the Cavs over the last couple of years, at least since the Cavs got bigger and have a lot of size there. Plus, it's just really hard to win kind of these baseball-type series games, to win both of them, to sweep them, and then to have two of them back-to-back. I just think it's going to be difficult. And so I'm curious from you guys, like, what would 2-2 over these next four games be a disappointing outcome for the Celtics?
Yes. I mean, the Orlando Magic are involved, so I understand you maybe just putting two losses on the schedule because of that. But when you're 10-0 at home and you're fully healthy, and the Cavs have been, you know, they're an intriguing team. They're a great team last year. This year they have taken a step back on paper through the first 20 games. And so I think that's a team you should be able to sweep. And then, yeah, the Magic, you should be able to win one of those games. So no, like 2-2, if you're at full health, I think that's a bad homestand.
Jay King.
I don't think it'd be that bad. Like two very good teams.
Very good teams. The Cavs are, I mean, like,
they're much better than they've played so far. They're still trying to figure out some things with a new look roster, but that is a super talented defensive roster, especially.
They're 13-9 and won their last three games, 7-3 in their last 10.
Figuring things out. And then the Magic obviously have been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So I wouldn't be mad at 2-2, but I mean, you're the Celtics. You should try to be better than that. It's also hard to beat a team two times in a row, especially the Magic, who the Celtics never beat ever. One win against the Magic would basically be the equivalent of an NBA championship.
I agree with that. So yeah, maybe like handicapping the Magic part of this.
If you beat Mo Wagner, you should also get $500,000 apiece.
From Mo Wagner or from the league?
From the league. The league should have that for sure.
Jay, I just want to acknowledge Nick Yelso's comment that you look like you're chilling in a chalet in the mountains right now. So thank you for joining us on your weekend ski trip.
I'm not a skier.
I think you'd be really bad at that. Snowboarding? You're more of a snowboard guy?
I would probably be the greatest skier of all time. But I'm extremely afraid of heights. And...
Oh, except for your not having any talent for it and your fear of heights, you would probably be the greatest skier of all time.
Yeah, and my bad knees, which I assume would be a problem in skiing.
So you've listed all these factors that would indicate you're not going to be a good skier.
I also don't like the cold. I don't understand why people want to go out and be in the freezing fucking cold. Because what? Snow is beautiful. Mountains are beautiful. Just fucking look at them, guys. You don't have to be out there in the cold.
You're an interesting character, Jay. So all of these things would point to you not being good at skiing, but yet your first impulse was to say that you would be the greatest skier of all time. Why is that?
Because that's always my first impulse with anything, no matter what. I would be the greatest ever. Although yesterday had a little tough day. Got home from a holiday party with my wife. I told her I'd make her some Annie's mac and cheese, right? They didn't have dinner at the holiday party. It was just a 6 p.m. holiday party, no dinner.
They have snacks at least?
They had a lot of apps. Good apps. I'm not complaining here. I'm just saying there was a reason why we wanted late night food. I said I would make Annie's mac and cheese. I forgot to put the fucking cheese in mac and cheese.
Noodles?
I left the powder of fucking cheese, the bag of cheese powder on the freaking counter. And yeah, it was
you just boiled her some shells, put them in a strainer, and then put them back in a bowl and
how hungry are you guys? Did you guys eat it anyway?
I put on the butter, I put on put in the milk, like mixed it together.
Gross.
I forgot the cheese. So I ended up making another batch, but that was a sad, sad moment for me. I freaking forgot cheese and mac and cheese. I don't know how. Like that's before that, should that be
would you describe yourself as the greatest mac and cheese maker of all time?
I still would call myself the greatest. When I execute, there's no one who does it better than me. You know, I committed a turnover. I it was one batch though. When you take the overall net rating of my mac and cheese excursions, I'm way up there.
I've never messed up an Annie's mac and cheese, so I would say my net rating, and I'm assuming B-Rob's net rating is better than yours on all times bowls produced.
I agree. I'm willing to see that.
It was tough.
I think that's a perfect place to end it, so all our listeners can just listen, like focus in on the great shame that should be, just associated with Jay King and his inability to follow. I think is a two-step process: make macaroni, add cheese, and he swing and a miss on step two.
I just a stunning, stunning, stunning thing. I'll never forgive myself. Honestly, that was a tough one.
We need a redemption story later this
week. It's really not about forgiving yourself. It's whether or not your wife forgives you.
I think she probably is rethinking her her choices in life to get to the point.
Where are you guys married now? Yeah.
She has a husband who can't even make mac and cheese. And I never make things for her. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm making mac and cheese. I'm really doing
this. Was this a long game? Was this a long play? Be like this, like, you can't trust me to make you things ever again. Like, remember the time I messed up mac and cheese?
She said the same thing, but no, it's not.
This is weaponized incompetence at its finest, Jay.
No, it was real incompetence. No weapon, no weapon there.
That's fair. All right. I think we've officially gone off the rails here. It's time to close out this Potable Six Pack. I guess for democracy's sake, we'll institute a poll and see who won this week's Potable Six Pack. You guys can tune in next week to find out the winner, but you can also tune in every single day for the rest of the week on patreon.com/stillpotable, where B-Rob, Jay, and I will be bringing you daily Celtics podcasts and videos. Please subscribe to the Patreon. It's a really fun place. We got a cool chat going on the Patreon app where we try to be as interactive as possible with all our subscribers. We're doing pods we'll do pods pretty much after every game this week coming up against the Cavs, the Magic. We'll see how they do at that stretch. We'll also be out there covering the Celtics as they go on the West Coast. It's just a really cool thing that we're trying to build over there, and we appreciate anyone who's subscribed. We appreciate anyone who's tuned in right now. And if you want more Celtics content from us, go to patreon.com/audible for FanDuel. Thank you guys for Factor, for CLNS on the YouTube, for broadcasting us here today. Subscribe to that so you can watch us anytime we're here live on YouTube. For Brian B-Rob from MassLive.com, for Jay El Nino King from The Athletic, who does not know how to make macaroni and cheese, and from me, Sam Jam Packard, thank you guys for tuning into this episode of Still Potter!